Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Again, if you have a story you'd like to share with us, if you're up to talking about your experience or that of someone close to you with this great taboo, give us a call on 1300 40 2020. While you do, I wanted to bring into our conversation a man who's been doing a great deal of thinking about this, and he's a great deal closer to all this than most of us. Dr. David Walley is a top Aussie cardiologist, and he routinely takes people to that brink of life and death, stopping their hearts as part of testing and treatment. And he's been one who's been contemplating this question. So what next? What does he make of these common manifestations of near-death experiences? Are we, as Bianca just said, peeking into the afterlife? Dr. David Walley, welcome to Open House.
Thanks, Lee.
It's great to have you in, David. These particular questions were triggered for you only about a year ago after one conversation with a patient. It's a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, I should probably clarify that although I do take people to the brink of life and death, we do bring them back.
Yes.
And this was a gentleman
who... point to note.
He'd been referred to me for investigation of blackouts, and I'd performed an investigation on him which had shown he had a life-threatening rhythm problem and needed an implantable defibrillator. And we were just chatting after the procedure about how close these warning signs of blackouts had been to him meeting his own end. And he actually said to me, well, this is not the first time, and recounted the tale of when he was in his early teenage years when he'd ruptured his appendix, been to hospital and had near-death experience in the operating theatre where he saw himself levitate out of his body, was watching the resuscitation attempts go on, and then had an experience where he was transported towards a white light and encountered deceased relatives, and all the common features of now a well-described literature on near-death experience.
And he hadn't spoken about this for decades.
He'd not ever told anyone about it in over 40 years. And in fact, while he was recounting his tale, he became quite emotional about the whole experience.
What did he make of it then, as he spoke with you?
I was expecting him to say that he'd completely turned about and was now an avid follower of one mainstream faith. But in fact, he was somewhat nonplussed about it. He said it had changed his life in the sense that he no longer feared death and he had a peace about whatever was to come. He took his life a lot more seriously. He felt he was a better person, more loving person. And he did believe in some transcendental being beyond life and death.
And that's a very common experience as well, that it becomes a life-defining experience for people.
These experiences are virtually always positive, although there are some accounts of people having terrifying and distressing near-death experiences. Almost always people come out of them feeling like they didn't want to return and having their life turned around in a positive direction.
And it got you thinking deeply about this as a person who's alongside, closer than anyone to these people as they go through this.
It got me thinking in on a number of levels, the first of all being the one coming from the position of wearing a scientific cap, you know, what to make of the whole phenomenon. And I immersed myself in the literature for the next couple of months. I think people visiting our house and seeing the books next to my bed may have thought I was planning my own early demise. There was a
sure
bit of an obsession with death and dying, yes. but it was a great journey, and I've learned a lot, and there is a lot of information out there.
Okay, with your scientist's hat on first, is there a physical, scientifically explicable reason for these common dynamics in near-death experiences, the white tunnel, the choice that Bianca spoke about, deceased relatives appearing, often a rapid view of someone's life?
Yeah, that sort of life review phenomenon, yes, is very common. The file of facts flipping through and people reliving experiences with people, both positive and negative.
Yeah.
Well, there have been a number of attempts to try and explain this. I mean, clearly you can't design a prospective experiment to subject someone to near death with any ethical boundary to it and examine with MRI and EEG and other tools what's going on. So a lot of this is circumstantial, and it comes from scientists who have said that, for example, there are certain areas of the brain, the temporal lobe, that can be stimulated and produce some of the phenomena that are observed, such as the levitation phenomena, which is seen in about 50% of near-death experiences. Bright lights are a little bit harder to explain. Some statements that hypoxia or lack of oxygen to the brain can produce that. But hypoxia generally produces confusion and disordered thoughts. It doesn't generally lead to a very surreal or super real phenomena which are internally consistent as people describe these near-death experiences. It doesn't sound like a hypoxic phenomenon. And it can't also explain some of the stranger out-of-body experiences. And there are a number of accounts where people not only observe their own resuscitation from above, for example, an operating table, but can also recount events occurring meters and in different rooms, or in one case, a woman recounted her husband arguing with a nurse in a ward two wards away from where she was being resuscitated at the time. So a little bit harder to explain that sort of translocation of consciousness.
But that's a very common thing as well.
Mm.
Yes. So as one who's plunged himself into the literature as well, it sounds like you come out with a conclusion, this is all very interesting, but who knows?
I certainly think there are elements which are difficult currently to explain from any biological data we've got. Certainly, this is a relatively common phenomenon. It's believed there are about 8 million Americans who've experienced near-death experiences, and it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Yes.
In all languages, all cultures. And there are commonalities. Something is going on, but whether this represents a proof of an afterlife, I would stop short of saying that, because these are near-death experiences. They are not death experiences.
No.
And these people all, by definition, recover and come back. So they're not dead.
You're actually quite content then, notwithstanding your specialty and your great expertise plunging yourself into the literature and the daily life and death decisions you deal with. You're still content with the unknown.
Yeah, I don't think it's a sign of intellectual frailty to accept that there are things in this world that we can't readily explain or subject to the scientific method. And this is going to be one area that just does not lend itself to experimental methodology. And we're left largely with eyewitness accounts, the so-called inadmissible evidence that science doesn't like, but which we use to base a lot of our decisions from day to day on, is the evidence we see from credible witnesses.
I often think if we knew all this, we'd be God in so many different contexts. But you do approach these questions from the framework of Christian faith. And that phrase from Bianca, "Is this a peek into the afterlife?" rings in my head. What do you think about that? How have you processed this from a Christian framework?
Well, I think it may well be an indication that there is some form of consciousness that exists beyond our current framework of understanding. I mean, the whole idea of consciousness is still poorly understood. The scientists still debate it all, and still, I think, arguable whether we can say that our consciousness completely resides within the movement of atoms within our brain, or whether there is an element of consciousness that exists outside of the brain itself. And so I remain agnostic on that from a scientist's perspective, but from the point of view of a Christian, I'm quite open to the possibility, and obviously I'm committed to the existence of a reality beyond that which we can currently touch, taste, smell.
One of many interesting parts of this is the fact that nearly all of these near-death experiences with the White Tunnel and how they feel, they're overwhelmingly positive, the vast majority of them.
Yeah, which is somewhat difficult to place into the context of our Judeo-Christian concept of heaven,
yes,
where we see this as a place where all wrongs will be righted, when judgment will be afforded to the evils that are perpetrated in this life. And we may well have a skewed bias subject, all of whom have been very good and repentant people, but it would be interesting to hear a few serial killers come back from near-death experience and tell us whether it was peace, transcendence, and all positive things, because that would be somewhat against my concept of a loving and just God bringing judgment and all things to right.
Yes. I'm sure for everyone listening to this discussion generally tonight, and again, we're about to throw it open to an open house conversation on 1-300-40-2020, this all inevitably raises ultimate questions of life and death and our destiny.
Yeah, and I think for no other reason than to get people, your listeners or others, thinking above the horizon, I see no problem in these sort of issues being discussed and brought to the fore, because I think probably most of us spend our days concentrating on the day-to-day stresses and grinds of our daily existence and perhaps don't look up above the horizon quite often enough until sometimes it's too late.
Most of us spend our life denying it, actually, and living as if we'll live forever.
Yeah, and for most of us, the question of the existence of an afterlife, God's existence, the purpose of why we're here, is not going to come to us in a near-death experience. We're going to have to make our decisions from other forms of evidence that are less dramatic and less spectacular than that.
So again, after you've delved into all this over the last year or so, has it changed your own approach to your own destiny and mortality?
I can't say that it altered my thoughts in that direction, which had already been fairly well formulated. It has made me ask a few more of my patients, though, after returning from our defibrillator testing. So far, I'm yet to have anyone in that situation tell me they've had a near-death experience, but that's not all that surprising, as what we're doing in terms of stopping the heart, as you say, or fibrillating the heart, it's only for a period of 10 to 15 seconds and then they're brought back. But I have had another couple of patients who have had more prolonged resuscitation experiences who have recounted exactly what we see in the literature from classical near-death experiences, and also a friend just the other night who I hadn't known had had a near-death out-of-body experience before undergoing neurosurgery. So I think there's a lot more out there, and a lot of more people have experienced this than we know of, and it's underreported because of, I guess, the fear factor or embarrassment factor of people not knowing how they'll be taken if they do tell their story.
Yes.
I hope that I have a more listening ear, and if people do recount their tale, I give them the opportunity now to do so, particularly survivors of cardiac arrest, and I see a disproportionate number of people in that situation because of the nature of my work as an electrophysiologist, and I always give people the opportunity to tell me what their thoughts are. And I think it's also interesting on the other side of the coin. You ask people what happened, they say nothing, and most people are prepared to accept that, but you then get the Kerry Packers, for example, who will in his famous interview with Ray Martin say, well, I've been there, there's nothing there, no heaven, no hell, no devil. I don't think that, just as you can't use an afterlife or near-death experience to be evidence of heaven, nor do I think you can exclude the existence of the afterlife because you've had a successful resuscitation. And I think Ian Powell, one of our theologians, said it very nicely when he said it's sort of like swimming out from Bondi Beach 300 metres and saying, there, told you so, New Zealand doesn't exist.
Yes, but from the Christian framework, people are able to approach this with a confidence or a hope.
Yeah, I think there's certainly nothing in the descriptions of these events, these phenomena, that would lead anyone to discount their faith that there is an afterlife. In no way would it be detrimental to their faith.
Dr. David Wally, it's been very interesting speaking with you. It's a most absorbing conversation, and we're breaking a few taboos here on Open House tonight. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, it's been great to be here.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.